Lake Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. It's November, November 3rd, and the holiday juggernaut is almost upon us. And if you drink, it's a time you might be buying more wine than you normally would. But if you don't know a lot about wine, that can be a daunting task.
Well, wine contributor Ray Pfister has the answer, and he joins me in the studio now with a how-to. Hello, Ray. How are you?
I'm great, Bonnie. How are you?
I'm doing terrifically well, and I understand you just had a very interesting tasting in Chicago.
I was in Chicago last week and met with the enologist for the Suave Consortium, which Suave is—
it sounds very, very, like, medieval or something.
Well, actually, it's funny because they do have a lot of castles in that particular part of Italy.
Oh, okay.
And it's a very interesting area, a lot of volcanic soils. And it was interesting because it was all whites, the entire tasting. We did about 15 wines. And then the only one that was, I wouldn't call a white, which was a dessert wine. And it was great. Interesting. Again, this idea, like we talked about last time, of opening your mind up to white wines. Plus, they're inexpensive, between $10 and $40.
Ooh, even like that, better. Yeah. But so what does the volcanic soil do? I mean, is that adding some sort of tartness or?
It does add, not so much a tartness, it just simply adds to, number one, how the vines are going to grow, how deep they're going to go. It enables them to get deeper into the ground to seek out that water, so they're going to work harder, so the flavors are going to be more intense. That's really what a lot of it comes down to, as well as, yes, it's the terroir. It's how that soil is going to affect the taste of the wine. Some of them have more minerality than others. But I enjoyed these wines. I found them very nice. And again, you know, what a great thing to tell people, hey, I got a great $10, $15 wine for you.
Well, and I don't tend to think of Italy as the place to get whites. I mean, of course, I know they make white wines, but I tend to think of them as the red wine, one of the red wine capitals. And so did you find any particular whites that you would say, boy, I'd point to that, not just because of price, but because of taste?
Yeah, I did. It's funny, though, because, and I don't have notes in front of me, because they're Italian names, they're a little difficult to remember. Other than the Suave region, which I would just about drink anything that they had there because I enjoyed them. They're not a typical of something that you might want to compare to a Sauvignon Blanc. No, they're not as grassy. They don't have the fruity texture as much. But again, very nice light wines.
What would you pair them with for food?
You know, that's the thing that they said. You can pair them with anything. They suggested anything, even things you wouldn't pair whites with. They highly recommend sort of, you know, the idea of meat, pork, that sort of thing. It's what makes it sort of the general all-around friendly wine. And, they're out there promoting it because they need people to sort of be more aware of it.
Well, you said something that I think a lot of people get scared of, but it's something that I'm very fond of, and that is dessert wine. I have to say it's an acquired taste that I, in the last probably 10 years or so, is something that I've really gotten into. What is it about it that scares people?
I think the sweetness. I think, a lot of people compare them to mom-pa wineries where they make nothing but syrupy wines, where they have really no body. And that's not the truth. I mean, there are some very nice, very expensive dessert wines. Late Harvest Rieslings, which are some of my favorite. They just have incredible body. Are they sweet? Yeah. Are they syrupy? No, not at all. You're also looking at Late Harvest Zinfandels, that kind of thing. Many wines have, you can get late harvest wines from them. You also have ice wines, which are very nice as well, which are completely different. They are considered a late harvest wine, but of course, ice wines come from grapes that are frozen versus regular late harvest, which would be, this is what, October? Some of them be harvested, I think, even as late as January.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I might be confusing that with ice wine. But they come much later when the grapes start to dry up and they get a little bit of rot on them.
Well, and the thing about dessert wines is that they are sipping wines. They're not meant, you're not meant to pour a big giant glass of them and drink them the way you would, say, a big red that you'd have with a steak. This is something that you sip with cheese or with other chocolates or that sort of thing. Literally, it's at the end of the meal.
Exactly. I think actually cheese is the best option. Myself, it's a little hard for because of the sweetness for a chocolate, but many people do recommend that.
Bitter chocolate. You could probably do it like a dark chocolate.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. But the thing about them is they're very comforting, especially when it's cold, there's snow on the ground like we will probably get. You know, they just have a wonderful all-around feeling. When you let them just envelop your tongue, there's just a beauty that come with them. And again, I go back to the Riesling because it's lighter and it has an incredibly intense taste. So a number of wineries, Trefethen up on Spring Mountain, Smith Madron, that's California wines, but you can get them in different parts of the country.
All right. So don't be afraid of them. essentially.
Absolutely not. You shouldn't be afraid of any wine.
Well, one of the ways that you get less afraid of it is by tasting them and learning how to distinguish things. And basically, I would assume, develop your own palate. Say, okay, you know, this is something I like. This is something I don't. We haven't talked about tastings in a while. And so what are some of the things that you should do? What's the etiquette of going into a tasting?
I think the great fear is more of an intimidation. You walk into a room, if it's very upscale, it might be a little frightening. Sometimes it's the people who are pouring, but that's not too often because they're there to help. They're there to answer questions. Some of them get a little overly enthused because they do have a great deal of knowledge about wine. And maybe occasionally they might overdo it a bit, but more often than not, they're there to be your friend. And of course, in the end, they want to sell you wine. So when you go into a tasting room, just simply spend a few minutes looking around. A lot of tasting rooms always have a lot of tchotchke you can look at. But take a look at the wines that they offer first. They're going to have those on the shelf. And just get a feel for what they've got and think about what you like. If you don't have anything in particular, a typical tasting is always going to start with the whites and work its way up to the reds and then maybe to a dessert wine or two. Usually they'll have a tasting menu for that day. It doesn't mean they're going to offer every wine they have because, of course, that gets expensive after a while. Gone are the days of free tastings, or at least in most areas. Here in Wisconsin, you could probably get some free tastings still. In California, I can still remember the days when we actually left with the wine glasses, which cracks me up. I still have a whole bunch of them at home. It's just
no longer, huh?
Totally gone.
Yeah.
Totally gone. Generally speaking, and this is important to remember to be a savvy buyer, when you go in for a tasting, if you buy a couple bottles, 90% of the wineries will take away the fee for the tasting if you buy. If they don't do that, suggest that and say, do you subtract the fee? It doesn't hurt to ask. They may say no, but many wineries do that because, again, they want you to buy. They're not there to scare you away. So the idea of coming in, you're going to start with the lighter whites and you'll work your way up to the reds. The biggest thing I always tell people is if you're traveling, if you're driving, be careful about how you drink. And more importantly, keep water in your car and drink copious amounts of water. Keep getting that water in you because you'll be able to drink and enjoy more as long as you're well hydrated. And it's just practical more than anything else. The second thing is don't be afraid to spit. Everybody spits, especially at a tasting. There is a good idea to just get comfortable with it. You know, if you're really embarrassed by it, bring your own cup. It's okay. Nobody's going to care. All you want to do is be able to taste that wine, let it get all around your tongue. Make sure, you know, just see, you get the bouquet, you get everything down, and then move into the next wine. So when you walk away, you feel you had a good tasting, and you don't have a big buzz on.
Right, you're not drunk, because right. that's not the point.
It's really, you know, it's no fun. It really, truly is. You know, with my travels, especially when I'm in Napa Valley, in 1 week, I'll put over 1,000 miles on my rental car. I can't afford to get drunk, and I certainly don't want to. Those roads are tricky. There have been a number of accidents on some of the more squirrely roads by people who've had too much to drink. And you know, they're two-lane roads, so you do have to be careful. It's
well,
not
you don't want to get arrested.
Well, there's that, and it's going to happen, I promise you. You know,
right.
While the police may not be very visible, trust me, they're keeping an eye on you because it is a valley full of people drinking. If you feel you're going to drink that much, it's a great idea to get a limousine, share it with a few other people, and go out there and enjoy that. But the idea is to go into a tasting room with an open mind, try everything you can, write down notes. You don't have to get into great details about, you know, minerality and body and finish. Just write down the simple things you like. You could even give it a very simple scale of 1 to 10 or even 1 to 5 or 5 stars or whatever. The idea is to remember that wine if you liked it. Take your phone out, take a photo of the label so you can remember it when you're back in your own neighborhood. You can try and find it again. That's the most important thing. Either that or you look into the wine clubs. Every winery in California has a wine club. Here in Wisconsin, we're very lucky when it comes to shipping. There's not heavy regulation. There are some states like Pennsylvania, forget about it. You can barely ship into the state. But the idea is you can join these wine clubs and buy these wines direct and usually get some pretty hefty discounts.
My most recent tasting was at the Wollersheim Winery out just north of Madison.
Prairie du Sac? Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. And Beautiful place.
Beautiful place to visit. But they had a free tasting of about 5 different things, again, going from that white to the heaviest and desserty. I think they ended with a port, a white port.
That would make sense.
But then they also had a paid one that included more. Right. And again, they did that same thing where if you purchased things, they would take off. And I didn't feel the need to go through that one. I just did the tasting of the five or six free things and ended up coming away with that white port. It was quite lovely.
See, that's the thing, too, is just sort of understanding a tasting. Well, why are you charging me for this one? Does it mean the other one's not great wine? Well, no, it's their less expensive wine, generally. Occasionally, they'll slip a ringer in there for you so you can get something nicer. The paid tastings are usually more premium wines. But know this, and this is what's important. If you have a good relationship with the person who's pouring for you, if you enjoy your time, you're laughing, you're just having a good time, they'll almost always pull something special out for you and pour it for you, even in a free tasting or even in a paid tasting. They'll pull out some of the better wines because they want to impress you. Anybody that works at a winery, anybody who's working at a tasting room, is going to want to talk about their product. They're proud of it. And if they can sneak a couple ones in there or at least make you think they're doing that, you know, it's going to make you feel good. And then you'll probably buy it if you like it.
Okay, so that's tastings at a wine, either at a winery or, you know, in a shop or something like
or
that.
Restaurants. What, or
yeah. Well, what about at home? Can you do this kind of thing at home?
I do tastings at home all the time. I do them for people if they ask me to do them. The idea is to have fun with them. So I always do them blind. Always do them blind. I don't want people to know what I'm pouring. So I'll go to the grocery store and borrow a couple of extra liquor bags, and I'll mark them, and I'll write down what's in them, and 9 times out of 10, I'll forget. I don't pay attention. I keep that list in another room. And then you just have people guess what they are, whether it be the varietal, if it's a Cabernet versus a Zinfandel, or whether it be, is this a California wine? Is this a wine from Europe? Whatever it might be. It's fun to play that game, and if you got a couple extra bucks in the end, I'll turn it into a contest and have somebody, whoever comes closest to guessing properly, wins a bottle of wine. They'll do usually about an average of 7. But I bag them. I have a very dear friend of mine, a winemaker in California. Rather than bagging them, he wraps them in aluminum foil, which totally messes with your head for what it's worth. Or you can decant them. Simply put them in, you know, some kind of a container, and that way they get a little bit more of a chance to breathe, and you don't have to deal with the paper bags. But it's a lot of fun to do that. Turn it into a game.
I was going to say, the paper bags have other connotations, too.
Absolutely,
you know,
yes.
Like under a bridge somewhere.
Well, when you got some left, usually you want to give it to people when they go home.
Exactly.
So it's like, please don't drink it in the alley behind my house.
Yeah, or in your car when you're driving.
Definitely not.
We don't want
your car.
That either.
Well, again, the guy's got to make sure that cork goes all the way in. If you do that, one of the best ways to do it is put it up against your hip, and a simple countertop will work. You can get it all the way back in very easily.
And so that makes it safe to bring it home.
I'm no lawyer. I don't know. I believe legally, as long as the cork is all the way in, you're safe. I would, of course, keep it in the back seat. You know?
Exactly.
Right. Out of sight, out of mind.
Exactly. At least until you get home.
That's right.
All right, Ray. Well, thank you so much, and I look forward to our next conversation.
Thanks a lot, Bonnie. Take care.
Ray Pfister is co-creator and voice of the wine blog and podcast Life Between the Vines. Pfister is also owner and engineer of Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, and he is a regular Lake Effect contributor.